This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
It's such an honor to present this next award.
And here are the nominees.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
And I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
I'm the king of the world.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
I am Katie Rich. I'm here today with our interview. I got the chance to talk to Tiana Taylor, who is the star of the drama 1001. It won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance earlier this year. It's now open in theaters, courtesy of Focus Features. It arrived at Sundance with a distributor already in place, which is kind of a sign of faith in a movie at that festival where you kind of never know what you're going to get. And that's a really strong sign of faith in a first-time director, in A.V. Rockwell, who made her first film, Lena Waithe, as a producer on it. And Tiana Taylor, as the star, is another kind of revelation. She's been famous since she was 15. She was signed to a recording label by Pharrell. She was on MTV's My Super Sweet 16. She's been a choreographer, a singer. She's been an actor in projects like Madea's Big Happy Family. She was in Coming to America last year. But as she told me, and as I think anyone who's seen the film can prove, that 1001 is really a revelation for her. It gave her this chance to show this incredible range and have this kind of fiery personality, which has been part of her celebrity, but reveals so many layers behind this character she's playing, Inez, who we meet when she's coming out of Rikers, and she reunites with her six-year-old son and then kind of kidnaps him out of the foster system. And that's a morally complicated decision, but it leads to them forging this really deep bond. And the film follows them over the course of decades. It also tracks New York City's evolution under Bloomberg and Giuliani and how Harlem gentrified and made it even more difficult for people like Inez to have a life that was worth living there. It's a surprising movie. It's really affecting. And again, her performance is such an anchor in it. And she told me about how it had already opened all these doors for her in her career just by premiering at Sundance, even before it opened in theaters. It's really exciting to see what she might be able to do next and talk to her at this kind of moment of being on the brink of all these new things. So let's hear that conversation with Tiana Taylor. You've been in the public eye for a long time. You've done a lot of press. Is doing press for 1001 really different from what you've done before?
Yes, it's absolutely different. I think this was my first time doing press for a movie that I've been number one on a call sheet on. So it's definitely a lot more work. yes, it's a lot of work. But also, just for what type of movie it is, it's a really heavy movie. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a lot of the conversations are really, really heavy and really deep. So it's definitely like a lot of work times 10.
Yeah. I mean, you've, you know, not shied away from work in your whole career, but when you sign on to a movie like this, you're number one on the call sheet and it's such a small movie. Like, you kind of know from the beginning that the work is the point, right? That you're going to be pushing that boulder up the hill.
Yes, yes, yes.
So why was it worth the work?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, honestly, it was worth the work when I first read for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I didn't even have the whole script yet. It was literally just like a few scenes, like the audition scenes, and then the synopsis and like a little tiny, like, few liners about who Inez was. And, you know, I was like, oh, I want to be a part of it. Like, this is the moment that I've been waiting for. This is the role that I've been waiting for. Because, you know, I've done a lot of different movies, but it's always been like a funny movie or a dancing movie. Like, nothing that really showcased me or gave me a fair chance to show the world what I could do. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, it was a feeling. And I just knew that it was mine before I knew it was mine. You know what I'm saying? Like, I manifested and I worked really, really hard for it. I got on multiple phone calls and did a lot of workshopping to get prepared for Inez.
I mean, when you started working when you were 15, you know, you were singing, you were dancing. Was acting always one of those goals for you, or did it take a while for you to kind of realize that acting was something you wanted to do?
acting was always a goal for me because I was always such a character. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have a big personality, and it's like, unless you know me, you wouldn't really understand, like, my sense of humor. You know, like, I'm literally a character. I was probably, like, 6 or 7, or maybe 8, watching Pretty Woman. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just always loved movies, you know? Like, so it was just like, when I became a singer, I was kind of like already into everything. Like, I've always been a type of kid, just got my hand in everything. But I think that how busy it is to like record an album and do press for an album, like at that time back then, it was really hard to try and juggle a whole bunch of things, you know? Mm-hmm. So being signed to a label, they have one goal and one goal only, you know, and it's to get this music out. So everything else was kind of like pushed to the back burner. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's always been a dream of mine, but it was never really pushed to the forefront.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you've, you know, kind of had some thoughts about the music industry in the past, and maybe you're putting music to the side a little bit, or is this kind of more of a new phase that you're moving into?
You know, yeah, it's just like, if things are not necessarily, like, working out in a timely fashion or in a certain manner that I would like it to turn out, it's kind of like, you know, like, I'm at an age and a place in my life where I could literally do whatever I put my mind to, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Unapologetically, you know? So if that's like occupying my mind, doing other things that I've always loved to do and just bringing those other things more to the forefront and maybe, you know, dialing back from this for a little while, you know, it's just me like sticking my hands in everything. I think that we all kind of go through that stage, you know what I'm saying? Where it's like, you don't want to try something new.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like one day you might want to do this, next day you might want to do that. And, you know, just taking a stab at it. And I always joke about this, but I'm like, I look at myself like a Glade plug-in. You know, I was like, why only be plugged to make the bathroom smell good when you can make the whole house smell good? You know, I could only be plugged into one wall down in the corner in the bathroom. I could be plugged in the kitchen, the bedroom, the family room, the great room. Like, I could even be plugged into the AC filter. You know what I'm saying? Like, So that's how I am. I'm just constantly plugging myself up. It's so many different sockets throughout the house that you can plug into, you know? So for me, that's just the space that I'm in right now. And I'm literally doing everything that I love. And I think timing is also everything as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because you get to the point in your career where you've done so many things, you've got partnerships and, you know, kind of opportunities in all these different directions. And a movie like 1001 is a challenge, like you were saying, and a challenge you wanted to do, but it's hard. Like it's low budget and there's so many, you know, movie roles that are glamorous and different. But this one, you know, of all the things you could spend your time on your, you know, capital as a star, like why go so small? Is it just the role of Inez that made you say, whatever it takes, I'll do it?
For me, I don't look at anything as being too small. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that this, whatever small role to other people is a really big eye opener for the world who hasn't been able to see what I can do. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, for me, if it's considered small, it's like, I take every small victory, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I feel like this role has already changed my life and it hasn't even come out yet.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's opened up a lot more doors for me. And I got a lot of no's in my life. And this one small yes got me a lot of big yeses on the way, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And a lot of big yeses instantly with just the trailer, you know what I'm saying? So I never look at anything as being too small. I look at everything as a blessing and an opportunity that I'm really grateful for.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again at an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
So when you take on this role, you know, your work with Avi Rockwell, like she's making her feature debut, you're really trusting each other. Like you have to build such a relationship to give a performance like this. And, you know, you've been on film sets before, but I'm imagining that relationship with her is really different. Like, how did you build that trust together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one, it makes it even dope because, you know, she is a Black female director. I'm a Black leading lady. So, you know, I thought it was dope because it was like real woman empowerment and like a real sisterhood and to be able to, like you said, trust one another and also just uplift one another and knowing that, okay, cool. Like at this point, you the quarterback and I'm the wide receiver. You know what I'm saying? And you got to trust me enough to be able to throw that ball and know and trust that I'm going to take it to the touchdown. You know what I'm saying? And I think that that is our dynamic and why it came out so beautiful, because I knew I had a job to do. I knew that I couldn't drop the ball, you know what I'm saying? And I knew that she had to throw a really good throw. You know, she got to be a really good captain, a really good quarterback to make sure the whole team is on point, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like she had a really big job to do and I had a really big job to do and I'm super appreciative for that.
Yeah, I mean, did you have conversations with her ahead of scenes? Like, I'm thinking of when you see Inez walking down the street in the beginning of the movie and she's kind of strutting through the neighborhood. And the way it's filmed makes her look like this hero, like, you know, this conquering hero returned to town, even though it's not really what it is, but it's kind of more in her head. So do you know what the camera's doing and how it's showing it to be able to kind of lean into that? Did you guys have that conversation just about what the cinematography
is
looking
like? I mean, we always tap in. I think that's the beauty of it. Like, I'm a music video director, so... You know, even though I haven't all the way stepped into television and film yet, I still understand what it is to be both in front of the lens and behind the lens. You know what I'm saying? So I think for her, it was also like a settling, you know, comfort in knowing like, I see what you see, boo. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
You ain't got nothing to worry about because like I'm super tapped in and, you know, I know what a certain shot should look like. I know exactly what to do, exactly how to catch it. So I think it was like the perfect balance for... you know, the both of us and her knowing that I understand not only from Inez's point of view, but from her point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of, maybe not a lot of actresses actually do this, but you talk about characters and you talk about women especially being unlikable. You know, female characters, they have to be likable. And in that beginning in the movie, Inez is hard. And you get why the people in her life are saying, don't call me anymore. How much was that in your mind? How much did you try to put out of your mind in, you know, capturing who she is in that beginning of the movie?
I think that Inez has always, you know, been a strong person. You know, I can definitely see that she would probably get in her way a lot of the times. But I think that that's just a part of growing pains. You know, we also not understanding that she's fresh out of jail and only 22 years old. You know what I'm saying? That's extremely young. So to also just see her grow from 22 to 34, you know, Inez has come a long way. So I don't think Inez did anything out of the ordinary that any of us haven't done. You know what I'm saying? Getting in our own way, taking everything personal. I think that it was just tapping in and we would create these categories where it's like, okay, cool. When do we tap into our inner child? When do we tap into this? When do we tap into that? You know, so me and AV had like a little bit of a system going on. Like, okay, cool. I feel like in this scene, like if we do inner child, let's mark everything that's inner child in red.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Let's mark vulnerable Inez in green. Let's, you know, angry Inez, hothead Inez. So we marked everything and it was almost like a rainbow script, you know what I'm saying? Where we were able to really see, okay, cool, like this is all highlighted in green because this is when she gets whatever category the green was, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was really easy to kind of tap into that because if you read it that way and you see that color, then you kind of already know. So by the time it's time to film, you're like, okay, cool, today we in the red.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes one scene has all of those things. That's what makes her so interesting is she kind of says something hot-headed.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, go Rainbow Inez. Rainbow Inez is a school of emotions. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah. Yeah. I mean, you say the inner child thing I was thinking about in that early scene in the hospital where she says to Terry, like, well, get your own fucking toys.
Yeah, get
like,
your own. Yeah,
that's what a kid
yeah.
would say, right?
Yeah.
And then she kind of immediately is like, okay, no, that's not the way to do it. And like, I have kids, but I feel like I do the same thing where sometimes like, your kid self comes out talking to your kids.
Yeah, your little feelings is hurt. And it's just like, well, damn. Because for her, she's like, I went out the way. Because at the same time, you know, she is doing for this kid, you know, things that weren't done for her. So not only is she still got that inner child, but like, she's still hurt. Because it's like, well, damn, I went out my way to make sure I got you. I thought this was the right thing to do. You know what I'm saying? And apparently to you, you're not impressed. So forget you. You know what I'm saying? Boom, boom. Yeah, just kind of catching herself.
Yeah. I mean, those scenes with the, you know, the youngest Terrier, like his face is just so like open and heartbreaking. And, you know, you have kids of your own, but working with kids must be really different. Like what's that relationship building like for you and that actor particularly?
I think because I'm a mom, like working with kids is super easy for me because I'm already super nurturing. You know what I'm saying? I'm just always in mommy mode. You know what I'm saying? So working with little Aaron was really amazing because like he fell into me. And I fell into him, you know, like we were literally like our bond off jump. It was just there. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And then Junie was on set a few at a time. So that was also like another comfort zone in between takes to be able to, you know, play with her. And you know what I'm saying? I think the great thing about kids is they're so pure. They don't know like, well, why are you handling me this way? You ain't my mommy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just kids, they respect their elders. You know what I'm saying? And I think that they respect comfort and nourishment. You know what I'm saying? Like they respect that. So as long as you cuddly, you know what I'm saying? And you have like a certain presence or energy, I feel like kids kind of just fall right into you.
Yeah. I mean, and when the movie too, we know that they're in that phone booth and you know, she's saying to him, like, it's you and me, like we have each other, like kids fall into that kind of thing. Yeah. You know, they'll trust you if you look at them like that.
Exactly. And what's crazy is people don't realize that kids need just as much as reassurance as you do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If not more, you know, they just want to know like, okay, yeah, this is what's happening. This is what's going down. Cause you know, kids will definitely test you.
Yeah.
You know, they feel like you're
going. Testing as too, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely saw from like my most frustrated parenting moments and just, you know, sometimes you want to yell back and you have to calm yourself down.
Right, right.
I mean, you're saying you're nurturing in all aspects of your life. I was going to ask about like how being a mother yourself affected you going into this. It sounds like it affects everything that you're doing at this point.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't think I would have ever been able to give Inez what I gave Inez if it wasn't for, you know, me being a mom. Because if you think about it, I had three different sons, three different ages in a short period of time. So it's not like we filmed for 18 years and they really seen me going through the trenches. You know what I'm saying? Like one day or the first few days would be little Terry. And then the next 3 days will be, you know, 14-year-old Terry. And then the next 5 days would be 17-year-old Terry. So you're dealing with these different personalities, but they're all your kid. You know what I'm saying? So I think like being a mom has made it easy for me to kind of like handle them and not have to practice that, you know? Like,
yeah.
Being a mom is a skill, you know what I'm saying? So to be able to kind of just tap in, it just really actually made it easier to flow and like to just be natural with it because I didn't have to change who I was, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
If anything, I had to more so emotionally and mentally tap into Inez. Like the mother part was easy, but also the emotional mental was easy too because I was dealing with a lot. I was 6 months postpartum with my youngest daughter. So I had my youngest daughter while I was raising a 6-year-old, you know? And
in the pandemic, right?
Pandemic was happening. And I was also dealing with just like a lot of loss, you know, a lot of loss of loved ones. So I was going to funerals during my lunch breaks. And like, you know, it was a lot, but I think the therapy of it all was being able to let it all out through Inez.
Yeah.
To just have every single cry, every single frustration, just to mourn and just grieve through Inez, you know what I'm saying? And really have that outlet to let it all out. Because once I got back home, you flip the switch and I'm super mom.
Yeah.
That's it. You don't get to cry. You don't get to be frustrated. You don't get to, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's when you really see your strength and when you really have to mask a lot of the things that you're going through because you have babies to raise.
Yeah. Had you felt like you could let part of yourself out in your previous performances like that? They're not as dramatic, but did you feel yourself? So this is the first time that's happened, really.
This was the first time. It's been certain moments where, like, even in certain movies where it would be like a little bit of a serious part, but because it wasn't a super serious moment, they would never use me really breaking down. So it was always kind of hard to stay in it because I'm like, well, I'm doing all this extra stuff and it ain't even being used, you know? So it's like to know that no matter where you turn to Inez, it's heavy and it's deep and you really get to see what I could do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this part is opening doors for you the way that you've said, but do you feel like you've spent time before, like, showing people what you can do or saying, like, you can use this part of me? Like, has that always been part of what your career is saying, no, I can do this too. I can, like watch what I'm capable of.
Absolutely. That's been, like, my you know, my whole career, you know, like just show people, like, because I'm a hustler, you know, I'm from New York. So it's just like, I've always been like, but yo, I do this, I do that. I got my own production company. Like, yo, whatever you need, I'll be styling. I choreograph, like I do everything.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, let me do this for you. Like, I've never let things fall into my lap. I've always earned stuff. But yeah, like with certain roles, it's like, I didn't have enough under my belt for people to want to give me the more serious roles. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So then I was just either the hot girl or, you know, oh my God, people love you to dance in this, or, you know, and it's just like, it's still not letting me get my rocks off. So then I started to want to tend to stuff that had nothing to do with what I actually did. Like, I don't want to do anything else where I'm dancing or doing something where, you know, like I want to do something that complete opposite, like just give me the chance. And I feel like this movie was like my chance. And honestly, like, I can't really be stopped at anything anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Go for whatever I want.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you talked about the doors have opened. Obviously, there's stuff that can't be talked about. But just in general, like, do you feel like you want to pursue more different things or just bigger things? Or, like, what is some of that stuff that's open for you now that you're really excited about?
You know what's crazy? Timing is impeccable, because I remember when I was done with Inez, I didn't have anything else coming up yet. And I remember I was like, well, damn, what's my next thing? Because I also want to be able to do other things. So then I wound up getting called a few months down the line to do White Men Can't Jump. And then after that, I got the opportunity to read for the Book of Clarence, which is a biblical film. And I wound up doing that. And I remember just doing that and just tapping in and killing it. And it's crazy because these were all filmed at three different times and they're all coming out this year.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, like even that timing of not only all this time I've been trying to prove that I could do everything, now I have a film like Inez, and then I, you know, have White Men Can't Jump, which is a complete different character, and then I have a whole biblical film, which is a complete different character. Now I got three movies coming out in 1 year that could really show my range.
Yeah.
That was God, you know what I'm saying? And it was just like also following my heart and understanding that everything may not be for me, you know what I'm saying? So if I feel it in my gut, just kind of like following my gut and following my heart, and I think that, you know, that's what made it kind of dope. So I get to show my range, so I'm doing that. I can't go too far into detail,
yeah,
but I'll be directing my first feature film.
Oh, we just got greenlit.
Yeah, me and my production company, Auntie's Production, we just got greenlit to direct and produce our very first feature film. So everything I've been asking for, everything I've been praying for, has come to the light. And that's why I said earlier, like, you know, timing is everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So maybe all those no's was supposed to be no's when they were no's, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And certain things being pushed to the forefront or to the back burner, everything happens for a reason. I think everything that was lined up for me was already written in the palms of, you know, of God's hands.
I mean, without saying too much about what hasn't happened yet, but as a director, like, do you know what kind of director you want to be? Do you know what kind of stories you want to tell as a director? Like, what are your ambitions in directing?
I think you can kind of see it in my director work, like as far as the music videos.
Yeah.
Because I've always been like a narrative-based director. And that's what really made me want to move into television and film, because I'm like, imagine having to like put together a whole movie and really into just a 3-minute video, a 3-minute song.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
economical storytelling, like music videos are incredible.
You know what I'm saying?
At that.
I'm like,
yeah.
Well, I'm ready for television and film. Like, I need a full length. I need a full length. And so it's like, it's always been there. Like, the kind of director I want to be is I want to be like a Spike Lee. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to tell different stories, and it's just always been in me. You know what I'm saying? But most importantly, from my experience of what I've been through just as an actress or just in the business in general, is to help people get their dreams and visions out, create more opportunity, and create safe environments.
Yeah.
You know, it's very rare that we're in safe environments in the midst of you know, doing our art.
Yeah. I mean, that, I think you watch a movie like 1001 and you don't think that performance and that quality of a movie can come out when people don't feel like they're safe to do their best work. You know, it makes such a big difference.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that movie definitely inspired me and it's taught me so much as a director, especially with going into like me, myself going into my very first feature film to watch AV in her very first feature film.
Yeah,
it was inspirational. You know what I'm saying? And I think everything happens for a reason. Like, it wasn't meant for me to get into television and film yet until I seen how another director working on her first feature do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like the way God has my cards lined up is magical. It's like, he the GOAT. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like everything, the timing is the alignment that's crazy. The timing, when and how. But it's just like, I don't know how I probably would have went into my first feature film had it not been for me being able to experience AV. You know what I'm saying? Because just as a music video director, I've been able to help her in certain ways. You know what I'm saying? And she's been able to help me without even knowing that she's helping, you know? But one thing about me is I've always been a student. You know what I'm saying? I've never been afraid to be a student. And I'm still a student and I'm still learning. You know what I'm saying? So for me, I'm always trying to collect any type of knowledge or wisdom that I can.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the Reviews Director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, J. Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
I love that this huge year for you starts in January at Sundance. You know, that's like it kicks off an entire year and you go with this movie and have this sensation there. Did that feel auspicious to you? I mean, you knew it was a great movie. Not everyone else did. But when you have a hit like that, you're like, OK, great. The year is off on a great track.
Yeah, honestly. And I had never been to Sundance before, but I always heard about it. I was always a fan. Honestly, I didn't know what to expect. I never thought that I would even see the day that I would win Sundance. You know what I'm saying? Like, so many amazing movies come out during film festivals. Like, you never think in a million years. Like, you know, sometimes you just be happy to be a part of it. You know, I'm just happy to be here. I'm happy to show off what I can do. So I don't even think I went with the intentions of, like, feeling like I wanted or needed to win.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest win for me was that someone believed in me enough to give me the opportunity that I have today to be able to show myself in front of thousands of people during Sundance. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was enough. Like, from Sundance, my life had changed as an actress. You know what I'm saying? Like, the calls started coming in. The more Zoom meetings started coming in. A lot more yeses started coming in. A lot more. You know what I'm saying? So it was just like, that enough was rewarding.
Yeah. But then how did that win feel? Probably pretty good.
I mean, that win, of course, felt amazing. You know, I think I almost crashed into a parked car and I was parked myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I got the call. Like, so, like I said, all those small victories already mean a lot. So, for the huge ones, it's like, oh, wow. Because all of these different things led up to this, you know?
That does it for today's episode. We'll be back on Thursday with our regular roundtable conversation looking ahead at this year's Emmy race, which is indeed already upon us. You can find us in the meantime on Twitter and Instagram at VF Awards Insider, and I'm on Twitter at Katie Rich, KateyRich. Our editor and producer, as always, is Brett Bukes.
Hey, I'm Brian Stelter, host of Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. This week, with the help of Dan Adler and Olivia Nuzzi, we're going inside the media circus swirling around Donald Trump's criminal trial.
People want coverage of Donald Trump. There are sort of shades of 2015, 2016. I found it to be a total break from the reaction to a lot of Trump coverage in the last 2 years.
Join me, Brian Stelter, on Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
From PRX.